This job is really hard. No one told me I'd have to govern. I thought I just got on magazine covers. I need a big whiff of Seattle spirit. Have my people bring it to me this instant, now.
This city is under a lot of duress right now. If there were easy solutions, Seattle probably would not have elected a woman mayor. Seattle's a hard place to live.
We can act and we should act.
The bus board went in the back of a bus, drove around Seattle. King County Metro tried to deny it was there. It was a brilliant one. It's the Gangs of Seattle, Smack Daddy Dow, the Bhagwan Shrill Sawant, and Heroin Dan Satterberg, and their various acts against the city described. Drug dealing, sex trafficking, crime rates up 103%, and it was all done by this gentleman named Apostrophe, and I want to thank him for joining the show.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. So let's start with this. King County Metro seems to suggest there were no bus boards ever there.
Well, I like their suggestion that they weren't, but I placed them. I built them, and I put it on the back of the bus. And of course, if you see the picture, it looks a little beat up.
Yeah.
The first one I tried to adhere, it did fall off, and it fell off in the street and got a little scuffed up. And but I learned, and that took about 120 seconds, and there was another bus, and it stuck on the second one. So,
yeah, I've seen the video of it.
They like, but
yeah, I've seen the video of it rolling up Yesler. But I think that we're trying to get them to admit they were there. How did you do it? I mean, did anyone notice? How did you go out and get these on the back of a bus?
You know what's really funny is I'm standing there at the bus stop, and I've got this big sign, right? And I'm kind of keeping the artwork toward me and the backing, you know, the just clear white backing out. You know, because people are kind of looking at me, what's this guy doing here? And finally some guy says, hey, buddy, what are you doing? And I kind of lean the sign forward a little trepidatiously. And, you know, I'm in Seattle, right?
Right.
And the guy says, he goes, awesome, man. You guys have ruined our city. Tell you what, I'll distract the driver while you put it on.
Okay, so you had Johnny Citizen step up. Did he actually go distract the driver?
John to accomplish. I have no idea, but it was the bus he was getting on that I put the sign on. So I don't know if he helped, but I'd like to think so.
I love it. So what caused you to do this? I mean, this is a big step, and I learned about it through a Twitter account called Visitor Guidance, at Visitor Guidance on Twitter. So what caused you to take this step? I mean, this would be costly, and I guess it's a little risky.
You know, I don't know if it's risky. A friend asked me, what if you get arrested? And I thought, man, would that not be a beautiful thing to face Dan Satterberg and say, you know, it's great that you want to prosecute me, but not the drug criminals. You know, and all I'm doing is exposing the fact that you're inept at your job. So I'm not really worried about the risk that way. The expense is really minimal. I mean, I've been fortunate and you know, I'm able to fund this myself, although since this launched, I don't think I'm going to have any trouble funding the rest. I've got lots of direct messages of offers of people who want to contribute to the effort, both in time and money. So looking forward to more.
So I'd also seen, and I don't know, are you connected with these other signs? Because I started to go through the Visitor Guidance on Twitter, that Twitter account. Are you connected to the signs that went up warning people about certain areas of town and to be careful of needles and drug violence and gang violence?
This is my fourth effort. So the others that you referenced, there, all the stuff on Visitor Guidance is an art project of mine. I decided, you know, Andre Serrano, who was our the guy who did the Piss Christ publicly funded years ago, you know, he said our artwork, our artists are free society's greatest advocates, and their triumphs are civilization's triumphs. And I think that, you know, since the liberals, Andy Warhol and the rest of these guys have been telling us forever that artists really are reflective of society, I thought, you know what? That's really true, but the challenge is that in this environment, the media won't get conservative art out. We just got to go put it out there in their face. The guys who put the new Trump stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame here this week, I mean, what a great thing. This is our job, to communicate to the public what, you know, is going on, and what the fact these guys ruined Seattle.
Yeah, I mean, we're fully in agreement on that. Obviously, you know, I'm honored. There's a couple of nicknames I started on the air. I was blown away to see it in your artwork. So I guess maybe you've heard me on the air before, and I appreciate that.
I do listen.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that very much. Now, let me ask you this. I get the feeling that you're not done, apostrophe, that there may be more to come.
No, we're not done. Just getting started. The great thing about the Seattle 9 City Council and the totally inept and defunct, impotent government around here is that there's no end of material. So if you're a public official and you live in this area and you don't plan to do your job that you're elected to do, you should expect to be featured in our artwork at some point. We can only do so much so fast, but the reality is that, you know, there's 52 weeks in a year, and I'm a relatively young guy, so I think this could go on for decades, hopefully.
Well, and now that...
Unless maybe they did their job.
Right. I mean, they could always choose to do that, but that would be the hard thing. And now that you're getting offers of people to donate money to help with this, I imagine there's probably people donating, want to donate their time and maybe help you hang up a bus tail, or I don't know, maybe don't go up in the Space Needle. Don't get hurt. Don't do anything like that. But I imagine you're getting offers of help like that as well.
You know, we even have some local businesses who have said, you know, if you wanted to hang these on the side of our building. So I think that depending on funding, there's going to be no shortage of opportunity to hang these kinds of things around the city. Hopefully, it's not just an effort to get artwork out. Hopefully, in the end, it causes a conversation that brings some reform in the way we govern ourselves here.
Yep.
One-party rules ruin the area.
Yep.
And it's a tragedy. I used to take my kids to the market for a special day with Dad. Now I won't take my grandkids because it's too dangerous.
Yep. I've got a lot of people saying that.
Lost all of us.
Yep. Last question for you, apostrophe. Are you concerned about Dan Satterberg, those guys trying to track you down and charge you with something?
No, I don't think so. I don't know what the statute would be. I didn't do any vandalism. You know, I put a poster up that I think he was easy to take down or fell down. And if they do, so be it. Let's go with the attention that goes with that, and let's contrast it with their ineffectiveness and really fecklessness in terms of prosecuting the real crime in our area that's plaguing all of us.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Well, thank you very much, and thanks for having listened to me, and thanks for what you're doing. Be safe, and keep us up to date. I'll just keep following visitor guidance on Twitter. I guess that's where I'll find out about the next installation, and thank you, apostrophe.
Thanks, Todd.
And if you want to see that for yourself, just text the word BUS, B-U-S, to 800-465-8770. I'll send you a picture of that, then an article that explains what this great artist did. Now, if that wasn't enough, I have news. Heroin Dan Satterberg sat down today for an interview with Jason Rantz. The entire thing we'll hear Monday. Jason has let me play this clip. You will hear the whole thing Monday with Rantz, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. This is Heron Dan Satterberg and Jason Rantz.
So how frustrating is it then? Because I saw today on Twitter, I don't know if you've seen this yet, someone attached sort of like a billboard to a bus, and your face is on it, Shama Sawan's face is on it, and Dow Constantine is on it, and it points gangs of Seattle. Again, they use Heron Dan Satterberg. They all say drugs, sex trafficking, cop haters, crime up 103%, public urination, homelessness. When you see something like that, and you know from your perspective that it's not as cut and dry as some people think, how does that make you feel? Do you feel like you're being villainized?
Well, look, I know people don't really know what my office does. It's humbling to go out on the campaign trail and have people say they really don't understand what the prosecutor's office has done. I've spent 33 years here. It's been my life and my career. Yeah. And there's a lot for the community to be proud about what we do.
Yeah, Dan, like this.
Our incarceration rate in the state of Washington is among the 10 lowest in the United States.
Remember, Dan, you didn't come on this show. All I wanted you to do was explain why you refused to be the King County attorney to defend our right to vote against government-funded heroin dens. Dan, I know exactly what your office does. I know exactly what you're supposed to do. And I know why he didn't come on the show. And I'm glad you went on with Jason. Jason is a great conversationalist. He's an incredibly skilled interviewer. That's going to be Monday on Jason's show, Heroin Dan Satterberg. And see that Jason didn't shy away from that, and I deeply appreciate it. We come back on the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH. I'm going to ask you to pretend that you are a liberal and you're listening to NBC News and ABC News. Seriously, try this. I need you to understand the power of silence as propaganda. It's the biggest weapon the left has. That's why they're trying to silence Dennis Prager. That's why they have silenced Jones, Alex Jones, who's not a conservative. And I don't give a whit about Alex Jones. But they're silencing him because it's a template. First, silence the people who are outrageous, then call everybody outrageous. I want you to get that in your head and imagine being a news consumer. Then at 5:30, the great Professor William Jacobson from Legal Insurrection will join us to talk about the left's coming silencing of conservative media in tech. Coming up in just about 5 minutes, one of the most important figures in conservative media in my mind, Professor William Jacobson of Legal Insurrection, talk about the coming silencing of conservatives in social media. And the professor knows what he's talking about because Amazon has been screwing him and his great site, Legal Insurrection. A lot of the research for this program comes from that program, from legalinsurrection.com. I want to put you in this mind. I want you to understand how powerful silence is as a propaganda tool, story selection. Now, I want you to imagine that you are a liberal and you hate Donald Trump. You either hate his policies or you personally hate him or both. Or better yet, imagine that you are a liberal who feels about President Trump the way you felt about Barack Obama. So perhaps you hated Obama. Perhaps you hated his policies. Perhaps you thought he was misled. Perhaps you thought he was an Alinskian plant here to destroy the country. There's a range of things people felt about Obama. Imagine that you feel the same way about Trump, but you're a liberal. And you've tuned into NBC News. Okay, this is where your friends' heads are at. And it's important for us to try to understand the victims they are of the propaganda of silence. So I'm going to do two fake newscasts. They're quick. But put your head in that space. Are you ready? Okay, here we go. First one's NBC News. Good evening from New York. And we have breaking news for you tonight. And it is a bombshell. According to a report in the Politico magazine, which names senior officials at the FBI, the Department of Justice, and the Department of Homeland Security, the Trump administration has allowed Russian mafia figures to ship cocaine and heroin into the United States across the same southern border. The administration has suggested a government shutdown in order to force Congress to build a wall around. We go live to Chuck Todd in Washington, D.C. Okay, so imagine that you are a liberal. You hate Trump or you hate his policies. You think he's a Russian plant or you just think he's a doofus in your home. And you hear that report. Your life stops. Everything, kids, shut up, stop. Sorry, honey, I got to hear this. You're on the road. You stop. You pull over. Oh, my God. They found it. Trump has let the mafia from Russia ship drugs into our country. Now, if you're a longtime listener to the show, you know what I'm referencing here. You know what I'm referencing. So let's do ABC News. Same sort of notion, okay? Put your head in the same space. Good evening from Washington, D.C., with continuing coverage of an exploding scandal that has rocked the White House and sent administration officials running for personal legal representation. I'm Todd Herman. As ABC News reported yesterday, a political report which named senior officials at the FBI, Department of Justice, and the Department of Homeland Security, the Trump administration has allowed Russian mafia figures to ship cocaine and heroin into the United States across the southern border. Tonight, ABC News can confirm a second report. White House officials have also allowed North Korean army to smuggle cocaine into the United States, also across the border and in concert with some of the most notorious Mexican narcotics gangs in known existence. One White House official, asked to remain anonymous, called this nothing less than a conspiracy to let an enemy of the United States profit from poisoning our citizens. We go now live to the White House. If you are a longtime listener to the program, you know I'm referencing the political research that showed that Barack Obama allowed the Taliban to ship opioids into our country. He stopped the prosecution of that. He stopped it. Ended it. They were ready to indict. He did the same with Hezbollah, shipping cocaine into our country. Allowed them to do it. Proven fact through the Politico, name sources. Not only did that not make it on any mainstream media, your friends don't know. This is not bias, folks. It's worse. It's the propaganda of silence. And to my friends in the media who were on me on Twitter yesterday, hey, I love you guys. You explain to me why your industry is doing this to itself. We come back. I want to stay on this topic. The great Professor William Jacobson, who started and runs LegalInsurrection.com, one of the most important blogs in conservative media, is going to join us to talk about the coming storm against conservative media out of Silicon Valley. Welcome back to the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH. We do bumper music by request on Friday, hence sometimes the lyrics. Hard to avoid. Joining me on the phone, one of the most important figures in conservative media. You'll hear me mention the blog here when I fill in for Rush, because I think it's just an enormous resource. It's LegalInsurrection.com. Professor William Jacobson joins me. Professor, welcome back to the Todd Herman Show.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
Such a pleasure to have you back. And let me just start off by, again, personally thanking you for all the work you do there. It's a remarkable resource you've put together. And maybe that's why Amazon.com has kind of been messing with you guys a little bit.
Well, we don't know, but they did kick us out of their program where you could make fees if people linked over to their product. So that was very strange. We never got a logical or verifiable explanation from them.
And they just pulled it, as I understand. And look, you know, if you don't read the professor's blog, you should. It is scholarly. It is entertaining. Everything is well-sourced. It's linked to other sources, primary and secondary. I don't think I've ever seen an irresponsible report run on your site. And so Amazon took that money away. But didn't they also keep the money that you'd earned?
That's right. What they did is they sent us a very lovely email. If I'm recalling correctly, I think it was on a Saturday morning, telling me your account has been closed, this is not appealable, and under our terms of service, we are going to withhold any money you have accrued in terms of these commissions they used to pay, these fee sharing. And, I tried appealing it internally. They kept saying we were violating their terms of service. I said, show me how. They said, this is how you're doing it. I said, no, we're not. We're absolutely not doing that. Give me some proof that we're doing that. And they never did. And even the Daily Caller followed up, wrote an article about us being shut down and contacted Amazon. And Amazon refused to provide them with any evidence. So, you know, these companies, it's, you know, one of, if not the largest company in the world in terms of capitalization. They just don't care. And I've never heard any of these stories of a liberal website or blog or YouTube channel or any of these things running into similar problems. You know, we can't quantify how big a problem it is because we don't know, but all of the stories we hear are of conservative outlets or right-leaning outlets being shut down and shut out.
Yeah, there's no kidding. You know, I owned a website with my friend Chris Widener that did quite well for some time, buzzpo.com, which we sold. And Amazon destroyed our ad revenues by calling us a hate site because we ran a video of a jihadist meeting his end while he was going through a rant. And we ran the video. By the way, Fox News ran it, ABC News ran it, CBS News ran it. We ran it, and they called us a hate site, and they tanked our advertising revenues. So I've been there as well. But you're tracking this on a bigger basis, Professor. I don't think either of us, you or I, are big admirers of Alex Jones. But he's not the only instance here. We also had Dennis Prager, YouTube, inexplicably first putting an age limit on Prager's PragerU videos, which are extraordinary work, and then I think just banning it, etc. So. How are you viewing this, and how dangerous do you think it is for the country?
Well, I think it is extremely dangerous because we all think in terms of the First Amendment. And the First Amendment, though, restricts the government. It doesn't restrict private people. And so the obvious response is, well, Amazon or YouTube or Twitter, they're private companies. They can allow what they want and not allow what they want. And in a narrow sense, that's true. But what has happened is you can count on one hand, maybe at most two hands, the number of companies who almost completely control the communication that we have on the Internet. It's, you know, YouTube, Google, and all its variants, which owns YouTube. Apple owns the, the podcast listing that's most popular, and Facebook. And you literally can count on two hands that account for an enormous percentage of the political dialogue that goes on in the country. And so when those handful of companies make these decisions, it's actually more effective at silencing speech than if the government did it. Because if the government did it, you could set up your own private network, you could do things like that. Who's going to be able to create the new Facebook or the new Twitter or any of those things? You can't do it. And so as a practical matter, when they so-called shadow ban people on Twitter, we used to call it, Twitter gulag, when they would restrict your ability to do anything or suspend you temporarily, when they do these things, it's bad. And when they do it in sync with each other, and again, I agree with you, I'm not defending Alex Jones, the person or the content, but, several companies on the same day shut him down across the board. And that's really astounding when, Apple does it, when Facebook does it, when YouTube does it, when Spotify does it, when they move in sync against somebody. It can be very devastating. And if we could all say, well, if they stopped with the Alex Joneses of the world, who would care? And maybe in one sense of truth, but they don't stop with the Alex Joneses. Once they establish they can exert this power, they move on to the Dennis Pragers of the world, who is a completely mainstream national radio show host, mainstream conservative, very thoughtful guy. And they never, that's the problem, they never stop with the Alex Joneses of the world. So if you give them that inch to censor people on their platforms, then they're going to take a yard and take a mile. And a lot of it is driven by the internal people, the employees at these places. And it's just a very bad situation that we're in, because if the government does it, you can sue the government for violating your First Amendment rights. When YouTube does it, it's going to be tough to mount a suit against them.
Yeah, and the government works through private companies to change the way employees are treated in offices. It's pressured to change how employees are treated in HR, things that can be said in offices. They've worked through in terms of L&I claims and things they will cover on how offices are treated. They often will employ companies in second hand to do what they want to do firsthand. And it's notable that, of course, the thing with Jones came after media pressure from CNN. And, CNN, as dogs in every hunt, ideologically, most pronounced, I think, since the president's been elected. Professor William Jacobson's with us with Legal Insurrection. We got about 2 minutes, Professor. I wanted to offer this thought that, conservatives are not good at organizing and fighting backs often, because I think we leave things to the market. I've posited the idea of a reverse boycott of Facebook and YouTube, which would be to create a bunch of people who click on a lot of their ads during the Christmas buying season and then click around the site so it doesn't look like a click bot. And in that way, just announce, we're going to click on every ad we see on your sites. We have no intention of buying anything, but we're going to spend your advertisers' money until you create a bill of rights that is ideologically neutral. Because, look, the left does boycotts. What about a reverse boycott to let all their advertisers know those, cost per click things, those are going to people who aren't going to buy from you?
Well, that would have to be done on such a massive scale. I mean, Facebook has, a billion users or something like that in virtually every country in the world. And that's part of the thing. I'm not sure that I'd be in favor of something like that, because, frankly, that is not that exact thing. But going after advertisers has been one of the main tactics for the last 15 years that left-wing groups like Media Matters have used. And that's really become weaponized lately. That, Rush Limbaugh's advertisers were attacked for years.
Yep.
And so there are other ways. That's what the tactic they use. And they're very good at it. And they're very motivated at it. And so I'm not sure that that's going to work. I think what's probably more likely to work is to publicly shame these companies and force them to live up to what they have promised in terms of these being relatively content neutral open forums. And if they're not, you know, perhaps they're not entitled to a lot of the protections that they otherwise have. If you're a publisher, you do not, you know, control the content, you don't contribute to the content, you essentially provide a platform in which others can provide content. You have legal, you know, protections from that. But if Facebook is now going to be making decisions, what's good, what's bad, and they're going to be doing it on a political basis, maybe they shouldn't have those protections. They should be viewed like the New York Times when it publishes an article. So I think there may be other remedies, but I think the first thing to do is for people to recognize the problem.
Well, you've done a good job of explaining that. As always, I thank you very much for what you do on a daily basis, and thank you for joining us, Professor.
Great. Take care.
Yep.
Down on Main Street.
The Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH and on the Greater East Side 94.5 FM. And thank you for everybody who listens to the show in Western Washington. Thank you to the people who listen to the show outside of Western Washington. And a huge thank you to the people who've taken the time to subscribe to the podcast. If you haven't done that yet, I encourage you to do it, because that way you never miss a show. You're also putting a vote up for conservative media in the world of digital. And I'm telling you, we've been talking about it this week. They're going to come for the conservatives, too. Okay, it's not just going to be Alex Jones. They're going to come for the conservatives. And I'm not saying they're coming for me, because I'm not that important. But one of the ways you make that difficult for them is you vote for us by subscribing to the digital offerings. Super easy. Just text the word podcast to 800-465-8770, brought to you by None Better Tax Resolution. On a personal note tonight, sort of an embarrassing admission to you. So the other morning, my wife and I went out and we walked our hound dogs, and we were coming back. We had a pleasant walk. It's not particularly hot. We had a nice talk, and you know, we've been going through some very, very stressful parenting times, but that's not the excuse. Fact is, neither my wife or I are good at remembering dates. So my wife's walking up the stairs to the deck, and she says, we were making plans for the next day and what's going to go on in the weekend. She said, oh, tomorrow is our wedding anniversary. Yeah, I know. It is a sad thing that we didn't remember that. So let me tell you what I do remember. I remember the first time I saw my wife. Remember it in detail. You want to hear the story? Okay. It's an interesting one. I was doing radio for a living back in the day and doing a morning show. And it was a pretty young oriented talk show in Salt Lake City. I was a pretty libertarian cat back then, really libertarian. And my future wife took to liking the show. And she thought, yeah, I'll go to this event, see what this guy's like. She'd see my picture online, and she somehow decided to look past the fact that I look like a weirdo. And she came to this event. Now, rule number one is don't date groupies. Well, she was not a groupie. She made that really clear. Oh, how? She walked up and gave me a note. Gave me a note. Yeah, I was here with all these guys at this event that a used car lot, really sexy advertiser. We had smashed my friend Rick's car with a hammer and let listeners smash it because he was getting a new car. It was a fun event, it was. But here walks up this beautiful young woman, and she's behind me. I didn't know it, but I sense it, and I turn around and I said, hi. And she said, now, we dispute this. I say that she said, someone told me to give this to you. She says that she told me, here, I have this. And I said, what is it? And she said, it's a note. I said, is it good or bad? She said, well, it's not bad. Now, I was a little bit infamous in Salt Lake City because I was a libertarian, and it's a conservative town. I'm obviously much more conservative now. So I thought, well, it may be subpoenaed. I opened the note, and she said, I've never done this before, never reached out to a personality or celebrity, but I find you really fascinating, and maybe we could get together. Wow, bold, beautiful. Well, I remember her hair, the way it looked in the sun. I remember the deep brown chestnut color of her hair in the Utah sun. I remember seeing her drive away. And I waited 2 days, and I couldn't stop thinking about her. So I called her. We set up a lunch date, and that lunch date went about 4 hours. It was in a park in Salt Lake City in the sun. It started with a literal lunch. Then went across the street to this park. We talked for 4 hours. Now, being Salt Lake City, the weather changes. And we went on a date 2 days later, and we went on a scavenger hunt. That I'd set up a scavenger hunt. And it was in 3 feet of snow. And I remember, wow, this person is not crazy. This person is sane and settled. This person is on the way to becoming a teacher. This person is beautiful and passionate, and she is compassionate, and she's curious, and she's intellectually curious, and she likes to play games. And wow, this is serious. Now, you know what else I remember? Flash forward all these years later, I remember the wedding. Man, I remember a specific moment. See, we did some things traditionally, like I was not to see her, you know, before the service. Now, I let her see me because I'd cut my hair. I used to have hair down in the middle of my back. Can you believe that? My daughter's so embarrassed by that. I used to have a beard that was red, hair that was red, well, reddish and reddish blonde, but down to the middle of my back in a ponytail. Did I say I was a libertarian? I was. And I'd had that hairdo forever. Even when I was at Microsoft, I had that long ponytailed hair. Cut it for the wedding. I remember her coming over, coming in the house to drop something off that we're going to use after the wedding. And I remember her down at the bottom of the stairs, and she screamed. Ah! She was joyful. But I remember a moment in the wedding, and that was when she turned the corner into the room. I was standing with the pastor and my dearest friends and my best friend since seventh grade. Matthew was my best man. And she turned the corner. I remember I remember the intake of breath. I remember the obviously white dress. I remember the long bouquet of flowers. I remember that her sisters came with her down the aisle. But I just remember, most of all, the feeling of seeing her turn the corner, realizing, my good Lord, this beautiful woman is going to be my wife. So we both allow stress to get to us. We didn't remember this date. And frankly, neither my wife or I are date people. I just am not good with remembering dates. I do not remember. I do not forget the feelings. I do not forget the struggles together. And there have been struggles. And if anybody ever tells you that marriage don't have struggles, they are lying, or they are stupid, or they are misled, or they've been married for a year. I used to laugh. My mom would talk about a marriage being more than a piece of paper. I thought, no, who needs that? Why not just be together? Well, spiritually, a marriage is a sacrament. Factually, you become greater than the separate selves together. I couldn't have done the businesses I've done. I couldn't have taken the risky schemes I've taken without the support of this woman. And so I remember that. I remember the struggles too. And you know what else I remember? We worked through them. A lot of people punt. We did not. And we will not. So I'm sorry I forgot the date. I have not forgotten the vows. This is the Todd Herman Show. We are every weekday, 3 to 6 p.m. I will see you Monday at 3 o'clock. Be well, be strong, and be kind.